Okay, good afternoon. So just apologies, I really need to get out of here by about 2 o'clock. I've got a flight back to Auckland. But anyway, let me start by saying I've written today to President Obama to express New Zealand's condolences over the shocking incident in Florida overnight. As I said before, no innocent person should have to worry about such violence when going about their daily lives, or to be persecuted for their beliefs or lifestyle. Our thoughts are with the victims of this atrocity, their families and friends, and those that responded to this tragic attack. And we wish those injured in it a speedy recovery. New Zealand stands with the United States and other countries in the fight against violent extremism. As you can see, I have Immigration Minister Michael Woodhouse with me today, and we are announcing that from 2018, the government will increase the size of the refugee quota from 750 places to 1,000. We take our international humanitarian obligations and responsibilities seriously, and today's increase demonstrates our commitment to meet the needs of some of the world's most vulnerable people. We believe today's announcement is an appropriate response. As you know, last year we committed to settling 500 Syrians over the next 2 years as part of New Zealand's emergency response to the Syrian crisis. That was on top of our annual quota of 750, meaning that for the next 2 years we are taking 1,000 refugees. Before we take any more, we need to be sure people have the appropriate support and services they need to resettle in New Zealand, like housing, health, education and translation services. Therefore, we've opted to increase the quota to 1,000 from 2018 after the Syrian emergency response refugees have been resettled. When the new quota of 1,000 comes into effect, the annual cost will rise by $25 million a year to $100 million a year. It's important to note the annual refugee quota is just one part of New Zealand's total refugee and humanitarian program. There are also 300 places available each year for family reunification, and an additional 125 to 175 asylum seekers have their claims approved each year. The new quota highlights New Zealand's commitment to help address the ongoing global refugee crisis. Just going to finish off the House and my activities, and then Michael will make a few comments and we take any questions you have. Parliament this week were advancing a number of bills, including the Contracts and Commercial Law Bill, Social Security and Children, Young Persons and Their Families Amendment Bill. In terms of my activities, I'm in Auckland tonight, Wellington and Hamilton tomorrow, Wellington on Wednesday, Auckland on Thursday and Hamilton on Friday, and instead of catching a flight, so I'll be out of here by about 2.
Minister,
thank you, Prime Minister. Just as you know, there are a number of technical elements to the refugee quota program. I won't go through all of them, but suffice it to say that the regional allocation of places within the quota will remain at the levels agreed by Cabinet in 2013. The majority, or 50% of those, is focused on our local region of the Asia Pacific. However, the number of places within the refugee quota for large-scale refugee crises will be increased from 50 to 100 in each of the next 3 years to maintain flexibility to respond to global events. Last year we saw a significant public response to the global refugee crisis, and the government has agreed to test the strength of that community by piloting a community sponsorship program in 2017-18. It'll be a modest program involving around 25 places, but it will enable Immigration New Zealand and the government to check whether we can indeed support refugees with specific attributes apart from just being the most in need. Immigration New Zealand will also commence a process to select a further refugee settlement location to assist the accommodation of the extra intake. There are presently 6 locations where refugees are settled once they've completed their reception at the Mangere Refugee Resettlement Centre, with Dunedin being the most recent settlement city. So I expect we'll be able to make an announcement on a further refugee settlement location sometime in 2017. Finally, I think I should just add that while the quantity of the refugee quota is important and certainly been a matter of public interest, the government has long been concerned about the quality of the settlement outcomes. Information which informed the 2012 refugee resettlement strategy identified that many adult working age refugees were not in paid employment. In fact, most of them, up to 10 years after they arrive, their children don't do as well in education as other New Zealand residents, and we remain committed to investing in the quality of those settlement outcomes at the same time as increasing the quantity. Thanks very much.
Minister, there's a big call for the quota to be doubled to 1,500. Why have you rolled that out?
Well, I think mainly for the reasons that I've just outlined. Yes, numbers matter, and it certainly matters to the individuals that are being taken, but it's not enough simply to relocate them into a strange country and then leave them. There's a significant investment that needs to be made to ensure that the settlement outcomes are good, and the government is committed to doing that on behalf of the taxpayer. So we're focusing as much on the quality as the quantity.
Can you explain a little bit more about how it's going to work with that 50 to 100 with the
doubling of the emergency places
within the same ability around the Asia Pacific region?
So as you know, as you may recall, the first Syrian refugees that were taken were under that emergency places in, I think, 2013, 2014, and 2015. They were 50 places per year that are earmarked within the existing quota to be able to respond to an international crisis. Clearly, the government felt that that wasn't enough, which was why we announced another 650 places over a three-year period ending in 2017-18. What we'll do as part of the quota is double that annual emergency places portion of the quota.
If we can afford $20 billion spend on defence, why can't we afford to spend a little bit more on refugee resettlement?
Well, we are spending considerably more. For a start-off, we've invested heavily in Mangere and its redevelopment. Secondly, as we said, it's a $25 million price tag increase for the new refugees that will be coming as a result of today's announcement. And the $20 billion for defence is a capital program over a 20-year period. So it's not solely a matter of just money. I mean, I think the real issue here is that New Zealand has always worked very hard to make sure that when people come here, that we give them the very best that they can expect when they come, and that means priority on housing, that means availability for jobs, that means education services, that means language services, that means welfare support, that means family reunification. We've got to make sure we do a very good job for them. And Cabinet's feeling was we're now moving effectively to a new base of 1,000, and then over time we'll see whether that takes us further.
The new community relocation program, how's that going to work?
Well, that's the details of that are going to be worked up by Immigration New Zealand over the next 6 months, but there are a number of models of a similar type around the world, and in particular Canada, whom we're looking very closely at. But those who are old enough to remember the Vietnamese and Cambodian refugee placement process in the late 70s might also recall that the Muldoon government of the day did place specific attributes, special characteristics on those refugees, for example, the ability to speak English, certain job skills, and so on. And of course, they were sponsored by churches, Rotary clubs, Lions clubs around the country. I think they settled very well. In addition to our quota obligations, I think it's worth testing whether or not that community support that we saw last year is enduring, and that's what this pilot will look at.
So you're saying the community, you want the community to have more to do with helping refugees than they currently do?
Absolutely, and I think they can do that within the quota program, notwithstanding this pilot. We were certainly impressed and not surprisingly, New Zealanders wanted to reach out. The simplistic offer of the crib on the Coromandel probably didn't quite pass muster, but I think with the details of the community support program better outlined, we can certainly trial what those church groups, what those Lions clubs can do in order to identify, support, place in jobs, make sure they're very strongly socially connected, because we know that that makes for the best outcomes for these new New Zealanders.
So the ability to speak English, job suitability, that sort of thing, is that going to be a criteria for helping select refugees? Is that
not within the quota? And I need to make it very clear that the UNHCR are those who select quota refugees, and the 1,000 from 2018 will continue to be those most in need of support. So they don't have any particular attributes. But if on top of that, New Zealand wanted to look at a community support option, there is more freedom, after they are mandated by the UNHCR, to select on other attributes, and that's something that we'll test.
So are you satisfied that background checks are sufficient in terms of ideology and what have you people coming in?
Yes. As far as we can, we have a very robust security check process, so that starts with UNHCR, simple identification, they are ruled out on the basis of any connection with conflict, either as on either side of conflict, they or their extended family members. Other matters such as polygamy obviously rule them out from a cultural perspective, but after that, New Zealand Immigration and Security Services do their own vetting in association with their partners, so that as far as we can be, we are satisfied that those who are coming are most in need and are who they say they are.
Do you have a preference for which region they come from at all?
Under the quota, no, apart from the regional allocations that we set. So 50% of the quota refugees come from the Asia-Pacific region, and then there are other categories for the Middle East, for Africa, and then for women in need, and of course the emergency places.
What do you say to people who say it's just not enough, the government's not doing enough?
Well, I don't think for some it'll ever be enough. And obviously we've had a very strong call for a doubling of the quota, but some of the advocates for that than I've talked to care a little less about the quality of those settlement outcomes. The government can't be as simplistic as that. We need to make sure that these people do well when we select and take them. They're New Zealand residents from the day they arrive, and I think all New Zealanders would expect that we should do our bit in improving the quality of those outcomes as well as increasing the numbers that we're taking, and that's what we're doing.
You mentioned there that some refugees after 10 years still don't have jobs, etc. Do you think they're discriminated against because they're refugees?
Look, that's a very complex picture. It is possible, and it's not just refugees that would say that. What we do need to do, though, is make sure that businesses are aware of the very rich vein of skill and effort that is available from our refugee community, and indeed that was part of the refugee resettlement strategy, was to put resource into connecting refugees and their families with the business community.
And you'd be encouraging them, are you, to settle outside of Auckland? Is that part of the strategy as well?
That's already the case. So last year I think only 16% of the refugees we took in settled in the Greater Auckland area, and that was because they had family connections already into that city. We have the other refugee centres, Hamilton, Palmerston North, Wellington, Nelson, and now Dunedin, the newest refugee centre, and we'll be looking to add at least one more to that next year.
Will those groups who are involved with the pilot program, will they still have access to government funds and support, or is the expectation that will be a self-funded operation?
Well, those are details that are yet to be determined, and that's the work that will take place over the next few months. My sense of that is that it's likely to be both. I don't think it's possible for a community organisation to be expected to take on the responsibility for the settlement of a refugee or refugee family without some form of extra government support. But on the other hand, I would also expect an organisation like that to be very confident in its ability to house, to place into work, to support the family through education and so on. So we'll work through the details of that, but the answer is likely to be a bit of both.
And at the outset, it's not an exercise in cost checking.
Well, it's any program of this nature will be on top of the quota anyway.
Right.
So the answer is no, it's not a cost-cutting mechanism, but I do want to trial this and certainly tap into that rich vein of support that we saw in the last year or so. Okay, you everyone? Okay. Anything else?
Commodore Bainimarama, does he indicate support otherwise for Helen Clark?
He didn't specifically answer the question, although I didn't specifically pose it as a question. I made a statement about why I thought she was the best candidate for the job, why we would appreciate Fiji's support, and that New Zealand was supporting Peter Thompson, their candidate for the presidency in 2017. But as you're aware, it's not a sort of straight vote, if you like, for the Security Council. So I'm sure Libby actually get fully tested in that regard. And of course, you know, compared to the influence of the P5 or whatever, it's a, you know, features a long way back from there. But we would just hope that they would be able to look past, you know, what happened in 2006 and recognise the quality of Helen Clark's candidacy.
He's still obviously pretty sore about the sanctions that were introduced in 2006. Did you expect maybe a better reception than what you got?
I thought there was about a 20% chance that he was likely to make those comments publicly. A little higher probably privately. It's not the first time he's made those comments about us or Australia. I mean, what's interesting is that if you put sort of the public speech that he day to one side. It was actually pretty friendly one-on-one, but more importantly, the people of Fiji are hugely appreciative of what we're doing. And whenever I drove around, there were people, you know, huge numbers of people on the sides of the roads, waving, cheering, you know, very, very happy about what we're doing and very appreciative of what New Zealand's doing. And this really is about the long-term relationship between New Zealand and Fiji, less about, you know, my relationship with Frank Bainimarama.
Are we supporting Fiji's bid for a seat on the Human Rights Council?
It's in 2018-2020, isn't it? We're giving some consideration to that.
Where is the matters at with the intelligence review and the legislation? The Minister did indicate that some moves would happen before Parliament went into the four-week recess.
Yeah, so I don't think it's likely we're going to get there between the, for the four-week recess. We did have IC meeting last week. We are, that's about the estimates, but we had a chance of a brief discussion about the legislation. It is in the process of being drafted, and Labor will want to have a look at that, obviously, to get a sense of exactly where they're going. But I think the way we would describe it is that the signs are positive of where it's progressing and how it's progressing, and we're supposed to see the hopeful and Labor support.
Will you be consulting with parties other than Labor on that legislation?
Sure, but the starting point is obviously to talk to Labor.
Did Bainimarama acknowledge New Zealand's response to Cyclone Winston at all?
Yeah, look, he said, I mean, I thought in those public comments as well, everything else, he made some comments about Cyclone Winston, and it'd be hard to, you know, not make that when you think about the enormity of what we did alongside Australia. So yes, I think he said that, but obviously that got a bit drowned out by the other things he said.
Prime Minister, just looking at Nick Smith's comments last week that low levels of home ownership amongst Māori and Pacifica because of low incomes and low education levels. Do you agree?
I didn't see those comments, I don't think. Was that when I was in Fiji?
Yeah, it might have been.
Sorry, I haven't seen the specific comment.
Yeah. Do you agree with that it's because of low education or low incomes that Māori and Pacifica can't get into houses?
Well, look, I'd need to see everything in the context of what he said. I mean, what is factually correct is that I suspect is right. People with lower income tend to have lower levels of home ownership by definition. It's harder for them to support the mortgage and to raise the deposit. But that's one of the reasons why the government has been working on a series of programs to try and give support for lower income New Zealanders. But I don't have any evidence to back that up.
You said on the radio this morning, I think, that there were some other measures the government could take, aside from the measures that the Reserve Bank may take with its macroeconomic tools. What would they be?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, there are always options and always things that get thrown around. I'm not suggesting that they were. I suppose the point I was really making this morning is that in terms of, you know, we've ordered the tax changes, you know, maybe they have or haven't made an impact. Some people might argue they have, some people might argue they haven't. But one immediate, the more immediate impact you could have if you wanted to, would be the actions of the Reserve Bank, because in principle they can control those who are at least non-cash buyers, and that's one option that was available to them, that they restrict the amount that an investor can actually borrow for an investment property for a period of time.
Did you say non-cash buyers?
Well, if they're cash buyers, they can't control them, can they, by definition, borrow money? Okay, thanks, Mike.